Morning. Hang on to your wallets. We're going to look at 1 Corinthians 16 and 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 this morning. I'm preaching on what's next, so don't blame me. Giving is part of the Christian life. And having a giving attitude is part of the Christian life. And so it's appropriate we talk about this. Unfortunately, all too many people think of churches just passing the collection plate, nothing else. And unfortunately, sometimes it takes on that kind of reputation, and that's a shame. But nevertheless, giving is a part of our lives as Christians. And in 1 Corinthians 16, Paul is reminding the Corinthians that they have a project that they're working on. It is a special collection, and they're working to put together monies to help people who would be in a famine in the Jerusalem area. And it was something that had been predicted a while ago, and they were putting together money. It was what we would call a special collection. But from this passage, and also from 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, we learn a lot about the giving process. To this morning, I'd like to talk about two aspects, and briefly, first, about the mechanics of the giving, and then secondly, and more importantly, and spend most of my time with the motivation of the giving. And these things are things that Paul deals with in these passages. The mechanics of the giving we've already gotten down pat, and we do it every week. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 16, and you can see it. It says, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also. On the first day of every week, each of you is to put aside and save as he may prosper, so that no collections may be made when I come. When I arrive, whomever you may approve, I will send them with letters to carry your gift to Jerusalem. And if it is fitting for me to go also, they will go with me." And then he talks about how he's going to be coming down and visiting them and so on and so on. So what he's saying is this money they're collecting is going to go to Jerusalem. We're going to find out it's for the purpose of helping poor people somewhere else. And what he's saying is to take the money, to collect the money and put it all together week by week, the first day of every week. And that purpose was so that when he came and when they're ready to get going and deliver the money, it was all there. Otherwise, what would happen? There'd be this great big scramble. Oh, we forgot. We didn't set it aside. What are we going to do? And maybe take a collection after collection after collection after collection, right? I mean, where would we be if we weren't setting money aside for snow removal and filling our fuel tank for the winter? Well, it's too hot for that now, so let's not worry about it, right? Well, I mean, there has to be some kind of advanced planning, advanced giving, and advanced accumulation for things that we're going to need and we're going to do. If we're going to be prepared, or if we're going to help the disaster relief fund there's a disaster relief fund and organ program in Tennessee that's being run out of Nashville, a church in Nashville. If we're going to help them, we need to help them and accumulate money to help so that they can have all of the goods and things that they can distribute on behalf of the churches that face disaster. It was that kind of a thing. We look ahead. We gather money on a regular basis. We gather money on the first day of the week because, well, that's when we're all gathered together, right? And habitually we're gathered together on the first day of the week to have the Lord's Supper and to worship God. And giving on a regular basis was part of the business. A planned giving, that was part of it. But it wasn't the only time we gave. They didn't just start giving the first day of the week here. They consistently gave, but they also gave during the week too. You know, if somebody has a need, you don't say, well, wait till Sunday and then I'll take care of it, right? They didn't do that. We see from from Acts chapter 2 on, they were giving on a regular basis as the need arose. We're just the giving outfit, the generous outfit. And the giving on the first day of the week and the giving in our assemblies, well, we can see this is a fitting and appropriate thing for us to do, and it's a fitting and appropriate for us to do so every week. And that's what we do. Sometimes we say, well, as a matter of convenience, we're taking a collection. Well, no, it's really a matter of necessity for the church to do what the church needs to do. The convenient part of it is that the time and the place is the best time and place for us to get the job done. Okay? It's not a matter of convenience that the collection is being taken. It's a matter of convenience as far as the timing of it goes. You know, we have a regular time to take the collection because we have a regular need for the monies, and we're in it together, and we participate mutually in it. And so that's the mechanics of it. And so what they were going to do is every first day of the week, they took a collection and they set the money aside, and then they were going to have messengers that send it to Jerusalem. And you know, they didn't have, you know, electronic banking or any funds transfer or anything like that, so they had to send messengers. They didn't even have a Brinks truck, okay? What they did was they get a bunch of guys together who the church trusted as reliable, and they were going to carry their bags of money and they were going to protect it and deliver it by hand. We would just send a check. But it's the same idea, the same effect. So anyway, that was the mechanics of it. I don't think we need to talk too much more about it. I think we're doing the mechanics of it fairly well. And I think the motivation is what I think would be the most beneficial for us to look at. We get the motivation more in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and 9. Paul wrote to the Corinthians a second time a little bit later, before he got there to collect the money. And one of the things he did was to give them a pep talk to have the money ready. Now, in the midst of all of this, he does say, you know, this is this gift of yours is not by way of coercion. It's not by way of force. You know, he's not threatening you with hell if you don't contribute. But he sure does a good job of persuasion. So apparently persuading somebody to give isn't a bad thing. All right? But you know, how much you give is not connected with whether you go to heaven or not. What determines whether we're getting to heaven or not is our heart and our relationship to God. And our relationship to God affects our motivation as to how we give. And that affects everything. Our motivation. What's behind our giving. And Paul touches upon that in several different ways. Let's look at 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God which has been given to the churches of Macedonia. In a great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord, begging us with much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints. And this not as we had expected, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God. So we urge Titus that as he had previously made a beginning, so he would also complete in you this gracious work as well. Paul is making use of a whole bunch of things here. One is the idea of competition, and we'll see it a little bit more in some of these other comments he makes. But Corinth is not Macedonia. Corinth is in another section of Greece. And Macedonia is the northern part of Greece, and Corinth is in Achaia, or just right on the border of Achaia, which is the southern part of Greece. And there was a rivalry between the two. Sometimes there were wars. But he's saying, well, look at the Macedonians. They were poverty-stricken, and yet they were given till it hurts, and they were happy about it. Why? Because they gave themselves to the Lord first. And this is what he's saying here. They gave beyond their ability and they begged. In verse 4, they're begging with much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints. You ever believe in something so much that you're willing to sacrifice for it? Yes, yes, it's so important. We've got to have this done. The need is so great. We've got to do it. People feel that way all the time. Maybe we don't, but sometimes people do. Right at this in this morning, there's a triathlon race called Try for a Cure. And there are a whole bunch of women, about, I don't know, a couple hundred women at least, who are swimming so many miles and bicycling so many miles and running so many miles to collect money for cancer research and to help cancer patients. And it's important to them. Obviously, it's important to them. How do you know it's important to them? Well, would you do something like that if it wasn't important to you? What would you rather do on a Sunday morning rather than swim in cold ocean water and then bicycle and run? It's important to them. There's a motivation behind what they're doing and what they're giving, and people do that. There are primary elections coming up. If you have a favorite candidate and you're serious about how favorite that candidate is with you and you really want that guy to win or that gal to win, what do? You reach in your wallet, right? And you give them money for the advertisements. You give them time to get on the telephone and call other people so that they go out and vote too and persuade people. And you donate because it's important to you. And what Paul's saying here, the Macedonians, is when they were challenged to support the people who are going to be starving and suffering a famine in Jerusalem and the surrounding area, he said, let's get on this. This is really important. This is excellent and good work, and we really want to be a part of it. And whether we can be a big part of it or a little part of it, we want to be a part of it. And even if Paul was saying, hey, look, you're too poor to give that much. And they're saying, no. I want a part of this. It's that important. And they were like the widow with the two mites, putting in all what they had in the plate because it was important. They were motivated by it, you see? And so what Paul is doing here is he's putting forth the Macedonians, I get the pronunciation right, Macedonians as an example. Saying, hey, look at the Macedonians up north. How about you folks? Is it that important to you? And so he's using a little bit of this rivalry business, I suppose, as motivation. But more importantly, he's trying to focus the Corinthians, and he's trying to focus us too on what is the motivation behind giving. Isn't it love? Isn't it, I see a need, and that need appears to be more important than my own needs, and I am out of love going to work toward this end, or give toward this end. There's somebody who needs relief. There's somebody who needs support. There's somebody who needs help. There's somebody who needs my time. There's somebody who needs my encouragement. But the motivation to give of ourselves is part of this whole package. And he's saying, well, hey, here's an example to follow. Here's the example to follow you. Is it really important? How important is it? You know, how important is the church here to us here? For us to give of our time and our money and our effort. Do we believe in what's happening here? If we believe in what's happening here, we need to contribute to what's happening here. If there's a cause, if there's a work that we intend to do overseas, if we believe in it, we'll put our money where our mouth is. And so this is what Paul is getting at here. And let's go down in verses 7 and following. But just as you abound in everything, in faith and utterance and knowledge and all earnestness and in love we inspired in you, see that you abound in this gracious work also. I'm not speaking this as a command, but as approving of the earnest through the earnestness of others, the sincerity of your love also. So here he's saying, okay, where's your love? You've seen the love of the Macedonians. How about you guys? Could you just picture, you know, the church, all of the Church of Christ in Manhattan, and all those Yankee fans putting together a big contribution for a famine relief effort, and me coming up in here and say, well, look, if these Yankee fans can do it, how about you folks up here? That's what Paul's doing, isn't it? He's saying, they're showing this much love. How about you guys? A little friendly rivalry. It isn't a vicious, selfish rivalry, but it's a little prod, isn't it? And so he's saying, let's see your sincerity of love. And that's where it should be. And then in verse 9, here's the source of our love. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that through his poverty you might become rich. Our motive for giving is the gift of Christ, isn't it? It's Christ's love. What did Christ give up for us? And what shouldn't we be able to give up for him? So many times people, it's a frustration. I'm not talking about specific people here necessarily. I mean, most of us get it, and I think Rusty has said so many times, we get it as far as giving, but some people get the idea that that church is just something that you go to, like you go to the movies and you put your admission fee in the plate, and that's not it. It's a church isn't just a set of rules that you're agreeing to follow, and one of the rules is getting together to have the Lord's Supper. Church isn't a club. Church is the people who have a relationship with God. It's people for whom Christ died. It's people who are on their way to heaven and helping one another to stay on the path to get to heaven. Church is the people who have received God's grace. And the motive behind being a Christian is what Christ did on the cross. His sacrifice. Though he was rich, even though he existed in the form of God, what did he do? He became flesh and died for us so that we might have eternal life. And if that grabs a hold of our heart, it changes us. If that becomes the center of our faith, it also becomes the center of our life. And that's what becomes the engine of our generosity. That becomes the source of our giving. And this is what Paul is saying right here. Not in that many words. He uses a lot fewer words than I did. But that is what he's talking about, isn't it? Verse 9. And so that's part of it. And then verse 10, he goes on to some other things. I give my opinion in this matter, for this is to your advantage, who were the first to begin a year ago, not only to do this, but also the desire to do it, but now finish doing it, so that just as there was the readiness to desire it, there may be also the completion of it by your ability. I'll stop here for a minute. It's another little prod to get on with it. And it's in a slightly different direction, but it's part and parcel of the thing. It's one thing to get worked up to do something initially, right? I've done it. I'm sure you've done it. If I've done it, you probably have too. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe I've done stuff that you haven't. You ever get really enthused about, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm really, we've got to do this. It's really important. And then and then maybe a week later it's just sort of off in the never-never land. And initially, when this first need came up, the prophecies about what was going to happen in the Jerusalem area in the near future, well, let's get together and make some money. Get some money for this. And everybody was all excited. And Paul is reminding them, you know how excited you were about this when the idea first popped up? You remember how all hepped up you are? Okay, well, now the rubber is hitting the road. It's time to put all of that in action. And you've got to put all of that in action on a consistent, long-term basis in order for it to be realized. That's what he's saying here. They were excited about doing this. They had the desire to do it a long time ago. And he's saying, well, let's bring it to completion. To bring it to completion. And then that's a lesson for us on all sorts of levels, really. We can have a real desire for the church to do this or that or the other thing. And all of those desires are wonderful. But we need to have folks who will pick up the ball and carry it to completion. We need to take on that particular thing, whether it's collecting money for a disaster or whether it's for something more mundane like paving the parking lot or doing something like that or hiring a preacher or doing some other thing, to pick up the ball and bring it to completion. Otherwise, it becomes just wishing and talking into air and maybe complaining that things aren't done, and it doesn't work. And what Paul's saying here is, look, you had the desire. Make that desire a reality by sacrificing to make it happen. Sacrificing your time, sacrificing your effort, sacrificing your money, and apply the discipline and the wherewithal to make it happen. And so he's saying, no, let's do it all the way to the end. All the way to the end. And then he talks about their ability to do it, and again back into their motivation. Verse 12 and 13, 12 to 14. If the readiness is present, it is acceptable according to what a person has, and not according to what he does not have. Paul isn't interested in cleaning out everybody's pockets and impoverishing everybody. For this is not for the ease of others and for your affliction, but by way of equality. For this present time, your abundance is being a supply for their need, so that their abundance may also become a supply for your need, that there may be equality. Let me differentiate in the kinds of motivations here. I may have to wrap it up a little bit earlier, but I talked about love being motivations. Love is the thing that overcomes greed, isn't it? Love overcomes greed. I care about other people and their welfare more than myself. And so love overcomes greed. Another thing that will overcome greed is to understand the need that is being met. And one of the things that's going on here, he's reminding them that, look, this isn't just some arbitrary scheme being put together. Let me put it in a different way. He's saying, look, this is not for your affliction and their plenty. We're being asked to supply food for the poor, right? And we bring a couple of boxes of food to a household, and here we are. We're living on hamburger meat and chicken, and we see in their garbage can there are lobster shells and pieces of half-eaten steak. And what do you think? Well, I'm providing out of my need so they can be lavish. Isn't that what you start to think? Isn't that a discouragement to generosity? Isn't it a discouragement to generosity if you're giving to somebody and then you find out that they've been spending more lavishly than you could ever imagine? And Paul is essentially saying, no, that's not the case. When you guys get there, you're not going to find a lot of leftover steak in their garbage cans. You're going to find a whole bunch of people who are going to be very, very grateful and very, very hungry. And that's the way the church is supposed to give. And that's the way it's meant to be. It's not meant to provide affliction to some and luxury to others. It's to help genuine need. And helping genuine need is what helps motivate us. Right? And so this is exactly what Paul is saying here. And he's reminding them that, hey, the purpose of all of this is to do a real need, to provide for a real need. And that helps overcome this tendency to have the sticky fingers when you're trying to put the money in the plate, you know. Then he talks about, you know, how they're going to travel with the money in the next section, verses 16 to 24, and I won't belabor that. And then I'd like to go into chapter 9 of 2 Corinthians and talk about his motivational speech as well. Starting in verse 1. For it is superfluous for me to write to you about this ministry to the saints. For I know your readiness, of which I now boast about you in Macedonia, namely that Acacia has been prepared since last year, and your zeal has stirred up most of them. They had made a big noise about supporting this thing, and Paul had also been bragging about them in the North Country, right? He had bragged about them. They were all enthusiastic about starting this ministry, and Paul was saying, "Hey, I bragged about you guys, you know, up in that Yankee fanland there, you know." And so he was saying that, and not only that, but their zeal encouraged them to give like they gave. And then verse 3, "But I've sent the brethren in order that our boasting about you may not be empty in this case." So that as I was saying, you may be prepared. Otherwise, if any Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to speak of you, will be put to shame by this confidence. So I thought it was necessary to urge the brethren that they would go on ahead to you and arrange beforehand your previously promised bountiful gift, so that the same would be ready as a bountiful gift, and not affected by covetousness. So there was some boasting going on, first by the Corinthians and how they were excited, and then that got out to being boasted to other places, and they were all excited, and that was contagious excitement, and that's good. And now Paul is saying, okay, let's make sure all of this excitement turns into reality, because what's going to happen is I'm going to go through to these people who gave more beyond their ability and gave abundantly, and they're going to have their messengers with their money bags, and they're going to see what you collected. And you've been bragging about how enthusiastic you are, and I've been bragging about how enthusiastic you are, and when we get here, I want to make sure the money's there. So I don't want any cause for being embarrassed, you know. And so that's pretty much what he's saying, and he's saying, well, look, you know, don't let it be affected by covetousness. When you give willingly. You know, it's fun to watch kids put money in the collection plate. They don't get covetous. They don't really always know what's going on. But it's fun to watch them anyway. Some of them are sort of, okay, go give, and then you have to pry the fingers off, right? You've seen that. And then others, or, you know, they're so anxious to give, they go, and it bounces off or something, and we have to go search for it. But the idea is the same. He's saying, look, God wants us to be able to let go of the coin and do it joyfully, not necessarily to make it bounce into the next pew, but because we're happy to do it. And that's really what he's talking about here. And he's sort of pushing them in the right direction, and then he's reminding them about avoiding covetousness. We're attached to our money. People are attached to their money. Americans are attached to their money. And everybody has some temptation to hold back. And we have to have the right mindset. Now, using your money to pay bills is part of serving God, okay? Using your money to support your family is part of serving God. It isn't just what gets in the plate that serves God, okay? I want to be clear on this. But we do have to have a godly perspective when we decide how we arrange things. And we don't need to be miserly about how we do things. We need to have our giving not be affected by covetousness, by a greed, a wanting to hold on to stuff for ourselves. And there's one basic principle that fights covetousness, and that's faith. You see, the thing that the thing that affects greed is love, and the thing that affects covetousness that helps overcome the fear of giving sometimes is faith. And here he talks about faith in verse 6. Now I say this, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. He who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must do just as he purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion, but God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that always having all sufficiency in everything, you may have an abundance for every good deed. As it is written, he scattered abroad, he gave to the poor, his righteousness endures forever. Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. And you will be enriched in everything for all liberality, which through us is producing thanksgiving in God. And the idea here is, well, if I give generously, what am I going to do for cash? What am I going to do? And then we worry about where the money is coming from. We need to plan, we need to budget, and I'm not saying you give yourself into a bankruptcy, but more often than not, our fear keeps us from being generous as we could be. More often than not, our lack of planning causes us to be less generous than we could be. And something that shouldn't stop us is to wonder about, well, if I give this much, then what am I going to do? Well, here he's saying, you sow abundantly, you'll be abundantly blessed. If you're a generous giver, God rewards a generous giver with more stuff to give. What happens? You're showing yourself being a good steward of God's money. All of our money is God's, right? If you say no, then we need to talk. But all of our money ultimately comes from God. Who gave us the ability to earn money? God. Who gave us our jobs? God. Who enabled us to do what we can do? Why were we born in America instead of some third world country? Why are we living in a big house instead of a hut? God. And so it comes from God. And when we give, if we have the faith to understand that it's God's money, and we have the faith to understand that God provides the money for us to give, and that if we have the right mindset and we're looking towards serving Him with what we have, well, He's going to replenish our seed bag, because we're taking from that seed bag and sowing where He wants us to sow, and we're doing His work. And what's He going to do? You think He's going to let us run out? I don't think so. I think He wants us to keep on sowing. At least that's what it seems to be saying right here. And so as far as our motivation for giving, there are two aspects of it. One, to overcome our greed is love, and another is to overcome our fear, which is faith. That our giving needs to be relying on God to supply in our needs. Our giving needs to be out of love, seeing the need that we're contributing to and being committed to meeting that need. That's the bottom line. That's the way our giving is designed to be. Whether it's for a specific collection, for a specific thing, or whether it's for the overall work of the body of Christ here in Oxford Hills, or whether it's for a particular program, it still all works out to be the same. We see the need and we buy into the need out of love, and we overcome the fear of giving generously because we're trusting that it's God's money in the first place. And that's really my challenge for all of us, because I need to remember this too. I mean, we all struggle. We all struggle with the fear. We all struggle with the love and perhaps the selfishness. And my challenge is for us to take it to heart and to be a cheerful giver and a cheerful follower of Christ. If you have any requests at all, if you want to put the Lord on in baptism or any other thing, please come forward as we stand in this moment.